and I want to make this big impression on people. And most of all, I guess I want to lie and impress. And I want to glamorize, and I want to be grandiose, and I want my store to be so big that you guys walk out of here and just talk about my lead. And it's real important for me to get honest and say I wasn't out there pushing keys and flipping pounds of pot or anything. I was a drug addict, and I was a poor one at best. And I struggled for a long time before I made it into the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. And my story is just like yours. I have a hard time living life without using. I struggle on most days more if I'm not hitting my knees in the morning, if I'm not staying in contact with my sponsor, hitting my meetings and all that stuff that we're told to do when we first walk into these rooms. And I tell you, I was introduced to the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous back in like 86 or something. I got busted. And my attorney had told me that it'd be a good idea if I went to rehab, maybe to help me out with my sentencing or whatever the case was. And I went. And I stayed there for 32 days, and a seed was planted. I stayed clean maybe for 90 days or something after that. And what I didn't do is give up the people, places, and things. 90 plus days, I picked back up. Ran for a number of years and ran back into the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous for help, because I didn't always want to quit using, but I knew, like, when I was here, I laughed a little more and I heard a little less. And I was right. That's about the only thing I remembered. And I really didn't think like all you people were using or going into bathrooms getting high or anything like that. I never really thought that. I believed that you guys weren't using dope, but I just really believed that I wasn't going to go through life without using dope. And why would I want to? I really didn't have a problem, so I thought for a long time, you know. I just thought if I come in here for a while, got my life back together, that's all I really needed to do. And I did that for like 14, 15 years. I'd come in, I'd get my life back together, I'd get a year or so, or whatever the case was, 9 months, go back out, come running back in, get some time together, run back out of here. And this cycle went on for a long time. And the progression of the disease had taken me places that I said I would never go, and I was doing things I said I would never do. And every time I would come back into the rooms in Narcotics Anonymous, there's always certain people still there. And their lives are getting better and better and better. They was getting married, having kids, having businesses, or being successful within themselves and within the family structure. And I couldn't get none of that. You know, my childhood is probably identical to a lot of people sitting in the circle right now. Dysfunctional family, alcoholic father, beat us up, that type of stuff. That's no different. I don't know, like, if any of that stuff contributes to me being an addict today, but I know there's one solution for me today, and that's like to show up at the rooms, surrender on a daily basis, and no matter what, I don't put anything in me. And I've been able to do that for a little while now, and I think, like, I've developed a fear today of people, places, and things, because over the past 14, 15 years or whatever it was, I was in and out. I would come in and I'd take some of your suggestions. I might give up certain people, but I wouldn't give up certain places, or I wouldn't quit doing certain things. And consequently, I would always pick up, no matter what. Or I'd get in a relationship 30, 60 days into the program or whatever, thinking maybe I could fix a girl or she could fix me, and that was never the case, you know. I don't know what happened along the way to make me realize, like, sooner or later, I had to just plain grow up. I was in and out of jails, detoxes, and institutions over the course of that, since 86 or whatever the case was, up at the 2001 there. 18 plus rehabs. I don't know how many detoxes. I don't know. I don't. Half a dozen halfway houses and three-quarter houses. I lived in them places. Them places kept me alive. I abused, like, insurance companies and a welfare system and a county system. I raped and pillaged, all that type of stuff, so I could continue to use. I would not grow up. I would not be responsible. I ran from absolutely everything in my life, you know. It was real easy for me. Someone had spoke earlier about living in and out of rehabs or something like that, and how easy that was. You know, it was nice for me to wake up, have somebody make my bed, cook my dinner, tell me what meeting I had to go to, and I knew I was safe. I wasn't going to use. Whether it was in a detox, rehab, or jail, I didn't have to make any decisions for myself. They did it all for me. I had no clue on how to live life and be a, responsible, productive member of society. Nor did I want to. I had a lot of fear based around all that stuff, you know. Since I was a little kid, I ran from just about everything. And I come into the rooms, and the first thing you tell me to do is, you can't put anything in you. You should probably get a job and get with yourself and the other men. Show up at all your meetings, get a sponsor, start working with some steps, and be responsible, grow up. I didn't want to do none of that stuff. I wanted to run back into another rehab or another detox or something like that and hide for a while, another 30, 60 days. I wanted to escape from life. And it didn't matter if it was with a grill or a casinos, whatever the case is. I was all about escaping reality. I had a heck of a time, like, waking up in the morning and, like, realizing, like, what am I supposed to do? I didn't have a clue on how to, like, live life. Show up for work every day, and if I did show up for work and I went to lunch, I was supposed to go back to work. I didn't know any of that stuff, nor did I want to like do that stuff. Like, my work habits were like Monday, Tuesday, skip Wednesday, Thursday, show up for work on Friday, get my paycheck and leave for lunch and not come back. For a long time I lived like that. Today it's been a big change. Since on my last run there, I had gone away to a rehab out east. And I, of course, another rehab, I go in, I tell them how they're going to treat me. I tell them how many days I'm going to stay, what programs I should be a part of, what halfway house I should go to afterwards, all that stuff. You know, like I have this wealth of knowledge, and I can't apply any of it to my own life. I could tell you the basic text from the front page to the last page, and didn't know how to apply any of this stuff in my life. If you come up to me at a meeting, I may even be using, and I'm going to tell you how to help yourself by not putting anything in you. And I'm going to tell you to get a sponsor, go to a meeting, and I might even have a meeting list, and I'll tell you which meetings you could go to. I'll go back in the bathroom and get high. I did that for a number of years. In the rooms, I couldn't figure out like how my life kept getting worse. I was living this huge lie. You know, I only need like these little moments of clarity in my life today to realize I can't lie to myself. If I'm not compulsive, I'll allow myself that just a couple seconds to realize this is bad for me. In them couple seconds, I could check my motives and realize if I should be doing it or shouldn't I be doing it. Motives is one of the biggest things that drives me today. I know if I'm doing, you know, most of my motives today, even trying to work this program of recovery, is very, very selfish. Most of the things that I do today on a daily basis affect me. Most of them benefit me. Most of them. It's very, very few decisions I make today are outside of myself. And I don't know if any of you guys are different. I like to stand up here and say I do everything for everyone else, and I put myself last. But, you know, I'm up here right now because this is how you guys tell me I'm going to keep my clean debt. By giving back. I'm up here trying to help somebody else, but really, I'm trying to free myself a little more so I can stay here one more day. That's how this stuff works for me. I take the suggestions that Jim's guys told me back in 86, and I use them today, because they're the exact same suggestion. It's go to meetings, get a sponsor, work steps, pray, don't put anything in you. Nothing ever changed. The only thing that changed from 86 to today is that I take them. I take the suggestion. My desire to stay clean is a lot stronger today than it was back in 1986. It's real simple. I really thought for a long time I was only hurting myself, and it didn't matter if I was in and out of jail, rehabs, or institutions. Nobody really cared. And after working a few steps, I work the fourth, and I'm doing all this stuff, and my sponsor working the fifth. I didn't go to monastery. I chose to do the fifth though with my sponsor, and I think that was real special for me, and it allowed me to feel even more a part of this thing called Narcotics Anonymous. But I realized then, like, all the wreckage I've caused. You know, and it's just outside of myself. What I did, I hurt myself, but what I've done even more is hurt coworkers, bosses, family members, loved ones. They're the ones I hate the most, you know. It's one of them things, like I was that real brave robber. I'd crawl across my mother's bedroom floor on my belly and swipe her purse at 3 a.m. I know I'm not the only one that did that in here. You know, but that's what I did. That was one of my things, you know, until the end, whenever I showed up at her doorstep, the police took me away one more time. You know, I heard a lot of people in here, and I don't, you know, I still ask for direction today, and I'm sure I'm always going to ask for direction. If I get jammed up, the first thing I do today, number one, I guess, would be is to figure out how big of a jam I'm in. But ultimately, I'm calling my support group. Ultimately, I'm hitting my knees and, or calling my sponsor. I wake up in the morning, I go to work, and I put in a productive day. When I come home, I'm with a family that I've gotten here in Narcotics Anonymous. Try and hit a meeting, hit my knees, and go to bed. Just being a productive member of society is one of the best things that's helped me in my recovery so far. Not running from any of that stuff. And as hard as it is, as hard as I think it is, and it's even harder if I'm not in like a spiritual condition, if I'm trying to do these things without hitting my knees, I hate life. I don't like my job anymore. I want a different woman. I don't like the kids, and I want to move. It's real simple. If I wake up in the morning, hit my knees, and I do that on a regular basis, the job's fine, the girl's fine, the house is fine, my life is fine. It's important for me to be responsible to my own recovery. These guys can't. You can't keep me clean. You help me stay clean. I can walk out of here and drive down the road and get high. Sometimes the neon lights are brighter than others on certain days. I got to white knuckle myself. I can't put anything in me no matter what. They tell me, you know, Lance asked me about, can you speak on living a program? I'm thinking, you know what? I don't know if I have anything to share. You know, I do exactly what these guys tell me to do. If that's living a program, then that's what I do. I do exactly what these guys tell me to do. I don't question that much anymore. I ask a lot of how to get through some situations. And I ask people that have actually gone through that situation. If it's a relationship deal, I'll ask somebody that has a healthy relationship. If it has something to do with work, I'll ask someone that works in the same field as me. If it has something to do with not picking up, I ask somebody that has a lot of clean time. I don't ask somebody with a couple days clean about me if I feel like you getting high or something. I ask somebody that's been through a lot of situations to get me through whatever I'm going through. And if all that is working a program, then I guess that's what I do. But I'm pretty hard on myself. And if I miss a meeting or something like that, I can beat myself up for days over that. Or if I forget to hit my knees in the middle of the night, I'll crawl out of bed at 3, 4 in the morning and hit them. I don't want to suffer any more consequences from using. I don't want to do it. I don't want to hurt anybody else. And after you get a little bit of clean time and work some steps, I realize, like, any decision I make today doesn't just affect me. It affects everyone else around me, too. The people I live with, the people I work with, and my family members, man. I put all that at risk if I make a choice to go back out there and put some more dope in me again. I mean, I don't want to get on this cycle of in and out of rehabs again. And I'm not going, I'm not saying if I pick back up, I know I'm going to die, or I know I'm going to jail, or I know I'm going to another mental institution. I don't know, and that's what scares me the most. If I knew I was going to maybe go to rehab, that may affect me somehow. I don't know. But what I don't want to do is suffer any more consequences from picking up if I don't have to today. So I show up, and I get involved in my home group. I don't put anything in me. I try and develop a stronger relationship with my higher power. I work steps with my sponsor. And I'm a part of this thing called Narcotics Anonymous. Somehow, some shape or form, whether service or trying to help out a newcomer, whatever the case is, this is my life. These people help me get a life. I don't want to give it up today. I don't want to put everything I have back on the shelf again. I don't want to do that. My life's pretty good today. And it really is about taking suggestions from people that's been here before me. No one has ever given me a bad suggestion. No one's ever told me to stand on my head in a corner. No one's ever told me to do all these crazy things that they give us knowledge of. They always tell me, look, work on yourself. Get with yourself for a while, man. Stay away from the women. That was a big suggestion for me, because I'll come into the rooms and I'll get in a relationship. I'll forget all about recovery. I'll start sitting home watching movies, ordering pizza or something. Forget my meetings all over again. I do that. I've done that. It was real important for me, like, to stay at the halfway house. And meanwhile, consequently, I go to this halfway house out east. I thought I'd stay there for 14 days and go to a halfway house in Washington there. And I ended up staying 46 days and going to a three-quarter house. Somewhere in that 46 days, I just give up. I got tired of running. Somewhere in the 46 days, I said, you know what, I want to get a life, and I want to keep it, man. And somewhere in that 46 days, I developed a faith that I do. Somewhere in that 46 days, I knew these guys were telling me the truth. And I had, no matter what, I had to follow follow in your footsteps. And it's been good to me ever since. I question a lot of stuff sometimes, but I do it anyways. I just do it anyways. I get a lot of fear when change comes about. I tell you what, this staying here this time has been a lot easier than me trying to fight and kick my way back into the rings of narcotics and arms. Because once I pick up, all bets are off. I just can't make it back in. You know, the shame and guilt becomes toxic over a while. You know, and I can't get with it. I can't get enough dope in me to shove down the guilt and shame anymore. And it's ER visits all over again. It's a never-ending cycle for me. So when I feel like using, I get with someone real quick. I was at a party with my dad's. And I used to use dope with my dad. I used to do all this stupid shit with my dad growing up. I didn't know any better. And I became his drinking buddy. My first rehab, I get out on a furlough. He throws me a barrel party. I'm home for the weekend from a rehab. He throws me a barrel party, and there's about all my cousins, uncles, aunts, everybody's there. They can't understand why I can't have a beer. I'm on a furlough from a rehab. I got to go back Monday. I went back the same day. My dad, and that was in 86, my dad has not changed his views over all that time, seeing me in and out of jail institutions and rehabs. I go up to his house this past week, and he had a party, and I was with two other recovering addicts, and still, my home group is Sunday night at 7 o'clock. We're leaving. I've had enough. He's already toasted. I'm ready to go. He's fighting with me about going to these meetings. He can't understand the whole concept of us not putting anything in us, and one of the toughest things for me to do is be around him. He is a people. That is a place, and he has things I use there. Used to use. I walk into the house, there's pills everywhere. Everything that I used to abuse in my active addiction, all over the place. I could not go in his house without taking another recovering addict in with me. I don't have enough pride for that today. I asked him, you got to come in the house with me. I ain't taking no chances. I've been in people's houses, raided their medicine cabinets when no one else is around. Will I do it again? Caught on a bad day? Probably. But not if I got someone else with me. That's how it works for me, man. I take them right in. I stand them right here where I get my water, my ice, pills all over the place. They stand right there with me, and I leave. That's how I got to do it. If I make a bad decision, I will pay some consequences, mentally, emotionally, spiritually. I can't get away with that type of stuff. And even then, I can sneak back in and take some pills and do whatever I think I'm going to do with them, sell them or whatever the case is. It never stops. Them thoughts linger with me for days, weeks afterwards, unless I take care of it the right way. I get out of rehab, I tell my doctor, I tell the pharmacist, I tell the ER rooms, I'm an addict. I run around, I do this for like a week straight, boom, 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 because I know if I don't do it when I'm hot and heavy with recovery, I'll never do it. I just won't do it. And it leaves doors open for me everywhere to go back on a bad day when I really think my back's hurting more than it is. And I can use a couple extra pills, and I'll call the doctor up and work them, or whatever the case is. It's real important for me today to take care of my own recovery, be responsible for my own recovery. No one else is going to tell my doctor I'm an addict. No one else is going to tell the pharmacist I'm an addict. No one else is going to tell the ER rooms I'm an addict. And I used to do that. I've had 11 surgeries. 11 times I picked up and ran with the dope. That part of my recovery is real, real touchy. I cannot take medication. Can't do it. I've tried everything. Have my mother pick up the medicine from the pharmacy, whatever the case is. I'm calling up the doctor, saying my grandmother packed it in a bag. She went back to Florida. She took all my medicine. By mistake. You got to call me in the morning. I come up with all these wild, crazy schemes, and it hurts me and everyone else around me. It's the most selfish act I can do today. It's to try and use and think I can get away with it. Anyways, since I first walked into the room to today, it's been the same stuff for me. Showing up at meetings, getting a sponsor, working steps, praying, reading the literature, and doing whatever I can to be a part of Narcotics Anonymous. And if someone asks me to do something, I don't say no. It's my life today. It's given me a life, and I don't want to give it back no matter what. Thanks for letting me share.
I'd like to introduce the second speaker, Dave K., from the Courage to Change in Washington, PA.
Yay! 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 I'm an addict named Dave. I was just getting resentment because these guys weren't showing up. Every time I share in a meeting, I say, I don't know. That's the first things I say when I share, and because I don't know. I know a couple things. I don't know how this works. It does work. I just, you know, I do what's suggested of me. I was coming around for like 5 years, getting 30 days here and there. You know, and I couldn't get, you know, the concept of not taking the first one. I was told in my first rehab that you don't use heroin 3 days in a row or you'll get a habit. So I thought that, you know, using the first one, that was all wrong. It wasn't. It was you don't use 3 days in a row. I was coming around for 5 years, getting connections in meetings, you know, nodding off in meetings. But I had a desire. And after being in numerous rehabs, you know, and it'd be the same thing. Like, you know, I'd get beat up, go to rehab, get out of rehab, and get high right away. Every time I went to rehab, it was for the wrong reasons. It was from my ex-wife, from my job, from my parents. You know, to get, you know, the panic attacks from to stop happening. And this time when I came in, I was homeless, beat up bad. You know, the last month of using wasn't, you know, the normal day was going out and stealing stuff and then going and selling the stuff I stole and then going to cop. And it was, you know, I was only using every couple days. And it was never like that. It was every day. But, the last month, you know, I just got tired. And I ended up going to a guy in the program helped me out. And them 5 years, there was always somebody. And I remember every time. And it was like, you know, it was a seed planted each time. They were like stepping stones on my way to getting clean. And I remembered something that, you know, there was something that someone said or, you know, anything like that that I always remembered. I went to a guy in the program picked me up. I was staying in this nasty hotel, and he found out I was staying there, and he took me to a meeting. And after the meeting, he took me back to the hotel. He said, "Get your stuff. We're going to my house." So I went to his house for a couple weeks, and he got me into rehab. And he said, "You know what? You've been to rehab so many times. You know it all." He said, "I hope you find out what you're missing." And I got to rehab, and I was talking to someone about, you know, about God. I never prayed. I never really believed in God. And when it was time for me to leave rehab, the halfway houses were full, and it was in the middle of winter, and I had a choice to go to the mission down in Northside or the mission down in Washington. And I was scared. I didn't want to use, but I thought I was going to use. I ended up going to the mission in Washington because of, you know, Northside's a place that I copped and stuff like that. And, you know, I needed new scenery. I ended up going down there. And, you know, the first night I was there, I slept in the chapel. And now, I've never felt peace in my life ever. The first night I was laying there in the chapel by myself, something come over me. And it was like I felt a little bit of peace, like everything's going to be okay. And, you know, it just the feeling, you know, and it was something I felt in my chest. For maybe 2 months later, I stayed at the mission for 4 months. But about 2 months later, I woke up one day and had this feeling come over me. And, you know, then I got this, like, you know, this big, you know, thought, oh, wow, I don't have to use today. And, you know, I felt like the biggest dumbass in the world because it felt like it was so simple, you know, that I don't have to use today. You know, and from that day on, you know, and, you know, I got introduced to God at the mission. You know, I decided that everything I've tried to do, I've tried to use successful for years. Nothing's worked. I'm going to do what's suggested. And, you know, I started praying. I ended up, you know, getting a sponsor, going to meetings all the time. I ended up getting an apartment and moved. I got asked if I wanted to get a job. Some guy in the program asked me if I wanted a job, and I said, I got to pray about this. You know, normally, yeah, I want a job, you know, right now. And after about 3 weeks, I was like, I'm ready for a job. So then a week later, a guy come up to me, said, you ready, you know, for an apartment? I said, I got to pray about this. Next day, I'm like, I'm ready for the apartment. You're in a mission with 50 guys, farting, burping, you know, snoring all night long. So I'm like, I'm ready for the apartment. I moved into this apartment. Now, this is the first apartment I've ever had where I'm living by myself. I've always taken hostages and lived with girls off of them or lived, you know, at someone else's place. So this was all new to me. I didn't know how to do anything. You know what I mean? I still don't cook. You know, don't know how to do that, really. I didn't have a shower curtain for 2 weeks. I didn't know normal people go out and buy stuff for their apartment. You know, this was all a learning process for me. I ended up working steps this time. I ended up doing a fifth step with a guy that was sponsoring me. Now, you know, I'm really good friends with this guy now. I ended up sitting down to do this fifth step with him. And when I was in rehab, someone gave me a piece of paper with this guy's name on it. And they said, this guy will help you. Okay? Now, when I got to the mission, he works at the mission. And, you know, I was raised in a neighborhood of all white. I mean, it's like middle class. It's all white people. You know, I never had no black friends. The only black people I knew were drug dealers or people that I seen use, you know, using in crack houses and drug houses and shooting galleries. So I, you know, I sat down and did a fifth step with this guy. And, you know, I used to have racial issues, you know, and just to sit down with someone and, you know, tell them, all the stuff and, you know, it is one of the greatest things I've done in recovery. You know, and, you know, me and him had, like, the things we have in common were, you know, is, you know, our desire to change ourselves. He smoked crack. You know, I smoked crack once for, like, 3 months. But he, I had to throw that in there. You know, but, I mean, it was, like, an awesome thing to do. And, you know, and just to share with him and him telling me, you know, stuff that he did, you know, so that opened up a lot of stuff. He's the first human being that I trusted. And, you know, I stuck around. I've worked more steps since then. But, you know, like the six steps about character defects. Now, I was told that, you know, part of this is attitude. Okay, now you can, like, you hear people say, you know, my glass is half full today or half empty. When my glass is half empty, you know, I got a bad attitude. Acceptance gone, serenity prayer out the window. You know, my character defects start mating with each other and spawning off other character defects. And, you know what I mean? And I'm a mess. And then pain comes in. And I hate feeling pain. I don't want to feel pain, but pain motivates me. You know, I'm also told that I have to investigate. So they say, don't get into a relationship, wait for a year. Well, I have to prove that wrong, you know. So, ends up in pain. When I have, like, a good attitude, it seems like everything's, you know, much more peaceful. I'm letting God, you know, do, just turning over stuff to God. You know, I remember going to bed every night having that feeling, you know, of hating myself and that battle going on inside me. And, you know, I haven't gone to bed like that since I've been clean. Maybe the first couple weeks. I've accepted all the stuff I've done. You know, I did a lot of bad stuff. But, you know, I accept all that stuff because I had to do that to get where I'm at today. I'm not, you know, I ain't giving up what I got today. I have my mother right now. She has cancer, okay? She had cancer a couple years ago, and she ended up beating it. And I didn't talk to my mom for 2 years. My mom told me that she wished that I would die so that she wouldn't have to see my name in the newspaper or get a phone call from the police saying I'm dead. So I didn't talk to my mom for 2 years. When I was clean, about 9 months, or between 6 and 9 months, I had talked to my uncle. My uncle said, hey, and I didn't call nobody in my family because I've done the same stuff over and over again, got clean, got the trust back, and then shot that to shit. So, I waited till, you know, I felt comfortable. I called her, and I find out she's got cancer again. She's real sick. Well, she ends up calling me back a couple days later and says, you know what? We have to talk here. My mom did a 9-step with me. She said, I'm sorry for all the stuff I did. And, you know, and my mom was a good mother. She was the best teacher I've ever had. She was better than any school teacher. My mom taught me a lot of stuff. You know, I'm the one that chose to push all that stuff aside. But, you know, she did a 9-step with me. I'm going on, in 2 weeks, I'm going on a family vacation with my whole family. And they're, I haven't gone on a vacation with my family since 87. You know, and I know that's only because of me, you know, changing and working steps and, you know, staying clean. I don't know, like, I do some bad stuff. You know, I'm not perfect. I work the steps the best of my ability. You know, here's the bad thing I'm doing right now. Okay, you ready for this? Because here's what I did. I moved into an apartment where the cable was hooked up already. Okay? So I'm like, cool, it's included in my rent. So the cable company comes and they cut the line. So what do? I hook it up off the lady behind my building. Okay? Now, first I take this to one of my sponsees. I'm totally open with my sponsees. I tell them anything, you know. I take it to him first. He says, well, hey, look at it this way. Does your mom have cable? I said, yeah. He said, it'd just be like you living in her house hooked up to her cable. I'm like, okay, that sounds good. I'll buy that. Okay? So then I share this in meetings a couple times. You know what I mean? I got to be honest about, you know, what I'm doing. And like, there's this little thing inside me saying, this might cause some unmanageability. So last week, I'm with Doug and Allison having dinner. And I said something to Allison. She says, you don't have a conscience about that? And I'm like, no, I'm okay with it. So all week long, I know she's praying that I get a conscience about this. So all week long, I'm MFing her because I know what she's doing. So it bugged me all week long, okay? You know, and that's how, this works. Like, you know, I believe what comes around goes around. I had, I don't know, like 6 months clean. I let some girl come and stay with me that had like 2 minutes clean. And I went to work one day. I come home. She stole all my change. Now, you know what I mean? I stole everybody's change. So I have to forgive. You know, that's another thing. God's given me forgiveness. You know, I don't like some of the stuff I'm getting. You know, like, I like holding resentments. I like being a jag off to people and stuff like that. But, you know, this program ruins all that. you know, I don't know. It's just, it's so different. You know, just seeing, you know, I talked to my sister the other day. My sister called me. My sister's paying for the whole vacation. And when we first were talking about, you know, they asked me to go, which was like a big deal. Then they're like, well, we're going to change and we're going to go stay at this other place. Is that okay? Or no, it was, we're going to go a week earlier. Is that okay with you? You know what I mean? You're asking me if it's okay with me. You know, they wouldn't have never done that. But she called me and her husband's side of the family had some problems, and she asked me, she said, hey, can you pitch in some money? You know, I'm like, no problem. No problem at all. So I'm thinking, like, you know, she's going to need like $500 or something. She's like, I need $150. You know, that's no problem. She said, you know what? She said, and she's saying this, and I can tell she's crying. She says, you know what? She said, for the first time, I know it's not about you. You know? And that's, they're the rewards I get for doing the right stuff. When I'm stealing cable, that's not right. But, you know, it's not about me. It is, but it isn't. You know, and I go to work every day. You know, I work with, you know, another guy in recovery. I live in the same building as him, you know. I had something happen to me that really bothered me, okay? And I'm in the truck with him. We're going to work, and I got a phone call. And, you know, I got told this over the phone. And, I mean, my heart just shattered and all this stuff. I get off the phone, and I'm like, okay, I can hold this in. Because pride wants me to hold this in, okay? Pride wants me to go home after work and isolate and listen to crazy music, you know, and all this stuff. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to open up to this guy. So I tell him, you know, I got a little tear coming out of my eye. And he says, shut up. He's like, you're going to look back at this in a month and you're going to laugh. You know, and, you know, that's what I need. You know what? But he was with me that whole time. You know, he was there for me. He's brutal, but he's there for me. You know, it says in the steps, you know, it says we. I can't do this alone. You know, I have real friends today. I have best friends today. I didn't know nothing about friends. You know, if you had dope, you were my friend. If you had money, you were my friend. That's it. You know, I have real friendships with people today. I can be there for them, and I know that they're there for me. I don't know. You know, I don't know how this works. I know one thing, you know, I've seen all them guys that helped me out all them years when I was struggling, when I was in and out. And when I came to Washington, there was like 5 guys that I would see on a regular basis. I would see them at every meeting. And I still see them 5 guys. You know? And for all the stuff that people did for me earlier on, you know, that's what I have to do. You know, I'm there for the newcomer. You know, I was in that position. You know, I don't want to be back in that position. So I got to do whatever it takes so I don't get back into that position. You know, I have to be, you know, it's not all about me. when I had like 12 months clean or something, I went on a date with this girl, okay? So we go out on this date. We come back. We're riding back. It was a double date. We're riding back, and my buddy's like, he's in the program. He says, so what do you think? What do you think, man? He's like, her parents are rich. You know, they own all these restaurants, and she's Greek. If you marry her, they'll buy you your first house and all this stuff. And that's where his mind is. And I said, you know what? I'm not like that. You know, I don't look at all that money. I said, you know what? She talked the whole time. Doesn't she know it's about me? It ain't about her. You know, she didn't let me get a word in. You know, that tells me I'm self-centered. You know, when I was high, I would read the How It Works and Why. Okay? Now, it doesn't work if you're high reading it. But I found something in there that I wrote down on a piece of paper, okay, and I put it in my wallet. I carried it for about 3 years of active addiction. When I got clean, I stopped carrying a wallet because I always put my baggies, you know, my scrapes in my wallet and stuff like that. So I stopped carrying a wallet, but I got this piece of paper out. It's on my refrigerator now, and it's out of Step 9. And, you know, it says the more that we help others, the more we begin to love ourselves more. Okay? I come here, I hated myself. I couldn't stand to be in my skin. I didn't know why anybody would talk to me. Today I'm okay. You know, I believe all this stuff is a blessing from God. You know, I pray every day. The 10th step, okay? You know, I take an inventory, you know, throughout the day. I take one at night when I go to bed. The second part of step 10 doesn't apply to me. I'm never wrong. Yeah, I can admit when I'm wrong today. I never could do that. Some days I admit it more than others. But, you know, I learn from my mistakes. You know, like I said before, this, I have to investigate all this. You know, there's two feelings I usually get. I either get like a joy feeling or a pain feeling. When I get the pain feeling, I know I'm doing my will and I'm not doing God's will. I don't know. Last thing, I remember saying every day that I get tomorrow we're getting clean, or tomorrow I'm getting clean. I'd be in a room with four other junkies. Yeah, tomorrow we're going to get clean, guys. We're not using tomorrow. You know, tomorrow never came. You know, it finally has come. You know, today I'm clean. I have my clean date's 123.02. That's 19 months today. So, I don't know. You know, Lance, dope fiended me too. A lot of people are mad at Lance. I picked up my 18 month key tag, and I, you know, he comes up to me, he hugs me, he says, "Hey, I need to talk to you after the meeting." I said, "Okay." So after the meeting, he says, "Hey, can you do your lead for me?" I said, "Sure, no problem, buddy." He's the panel coordinator for the rehab, 10 minutes up the road. I'm like, "No problem." He said, "Okay." He pulls his piece of paper out. He's like, "You're doing your lead at 10:15 at the amphitheater." That word amphitheater scared the hell out of me. You know? You know, thank you for listening. I love you guys. Thank you.
Well, we still got plenty of time if anybody would like to share about the topic.
Young kid, you know, and A lot of people don't get to their place of surrender until they're older in age. And it's such, I mean, when I was young, you know, I had a lot of pain left to endure. And, you know, I was 35 when I got clean. But what's really nice is that when you have somebody younger, you know that surrender to the program. And Dave has been like a brother. I know we all are, you know. It's just, I just have a real heart for him because he's helped that young generation when they won't listen to us. You know, because we're just a little bit older. He goes to the youth home every week, and he talks to those teenagers, and, you know, that's his call, and it's just a wonderful thing to be able to watch the light come on in somebody's eyes, you know, when they come out of those, the darkness. And anyway, that's all I wanted to say.
All right,
Sally. Thanks, Sally. We're praying about the table.
You ever said if it was still on
or not? Oh, yeah, you know, he's going to come across the street.
Yeah, give him a hit on it.
Could we please have the reading of just for today? The podium, please.
My name's John, I'm an addict.
No. Tell yourself, just for today, my thoughts will be on my recovery, living and enjoying life without the use of drugs. Just for today, I will have faith in someone in NA who believes in me and wants to help me in my recovery. Just for today, I will have a program, I will try to follow it to the best of my ability. Just for today, through NA, I will try to get a better perspective on my life. Just for today, I will be unafraid. My thoughts will be on my new associations, people who are not using and who have found a new way of life. So long as I follow that way, I have nothing to fear.
We have a nice way of closing.
We have a moment of silence followed by the wee version of the end of the prayer.
God, grant us the serenity to accept the things we cannot change, the courage to change the things we can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Keep coming back, work,
deliver it.
Let's talk like that.